Welcome back to the Mölnlycke podcast studio and our second episode about value-based healthcare. I'm Andrea Corshaw, your host for the Wound Care Voices series and Director for Professional Education at Mölnlycke. If you're a fan of podcasts, you can find all of our previous ones on clinicallearning.com, our new education hub for healthcare professionals. This episode is following on from the first on the topic of value-based healthcare, which, if you're unfamiliar with the term, is basically used to describe how we can achieve high-quality health outcomes for patients using the resources available. I'm very glad to be joined again by Hamish Laing and James McHale. Hamish started out as a plastic surgeon in the NHS, then went on to be a medical director and chief information officer. He now works as a professor of enhanced innovation, engagement and outcomes at Swansea University in Wales, where he not only researches, but also teaches on the topic of value-based healthcare. Hello again, Hamish.
Hi, Andrea.
Our second voice is James McHale, a global value-based partnerships manager for Mölnlycke and based in the UK. He's been with Mölnlycke for over 4 years now, working alongside experts in this area of health economics. James, here we go with the second episode. I hope you're looking forward to it as well.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, thank you, Andrea.
So Hamish, I'm going to jump in where we kind of left off at the end of episode one. And if anybody's listening who didn't listen to episode one, please do. So the question I want to ask you, Hamish, is around the relevance of value-based healthcare to wound care. Can you kind of dive into that a little bit for me?
Yeah, of course, Andrea. Well, I would say that wound care is an area where value-based healthcare is highly relevant. We know that wound care, the costs of wound care are a substantial proportion of health service budgets. I think it's said to be around 4% as an estimate in the UK. So it's something that a lot of money is being spent on. And we really have to be sure that we get the very best value out of that investment in people's care. So I absolutely think that you should have a value-based lens when considering wound care.
So yeah, I must echo exactly what Hamish says there, that the cost of wound care within the UK is huge. It's comparable with obesity, and it's only getting larger. The paper from Julian Guest suggested that back in 2003 to 2008, it grew by, I think, around about £3 billion. So it creates an opportunity with such challenges, create an opportunity. And looking at it from more of a value-based lens could be that opportunity as well. So I suppose it'd be good to start putting some positivity around this discussion then, Hamish. So let's have a chat. What opportunities have we got, or how could we capitalise on this value-based approach from wound care?
Well, so I think there are many ways that value-based healthcare is relevant to wound care, and I'll try and pick up one or two of them. So the first is that if you were to look in any pathway of care, a typical long-term pathway of care was for, say, someone like a chronic wound, you'd start with prevention. And probably the highest value is in prevention. So there are some types of wound that are highly preventable. For example, things like pressure ulcers and things like some venous ulceration, where there are things that can be done to prevent it happening in the first place. And that is something we should be investing in order to prevent some of the consequential wounds. And then when you've got a wound, well, there are many choices. There's a huge range of choices of how to care for a wound. They might be conservative, or they could even be surgical. And then there's a whole range of different types of dressing. And those are priced differently, so there is different cost. And so one of the things that we tend to do in wound care is to focus very much on clinical outcomes. You know, time to healing is a typical measure of if you read, you know, a paper about a wound care option. And of course that's important, and of course patients want their wounds healed up, and they want them to get healed quickly. But there are many other things that would matter to a person with a wound. You know, is it painful? Is it painful in its own right? And is it painful to have the dressings? Mm. And some people come to dread coming back to have their wounds dressed. Is it smelly? You know, that's socially very difficult and unpleasant. It's unpleasant for the person, but it's unpleasant for them and their close companions. You know, does it make a dreadful mess of their favourite garment? Does it disrupt their day? You know, are they having to spend a lot of time attending wound care clinics, for example? And time can often be also very expensive. They've got to travel and so on, and people are very pushed for money. So all of those things, and is it stigmatising? Is it embarrassing? All of those things that we don't really capture very well or pay very much attention to in general, we certainly, we may ask about it, we don't really measure it. And some of the patient-reported outcome measures therefore allow you to start to open that discussion with patients and give them an opportunity to talk about that bit of their wound care challenge, if you like. So, you know, that's just two ways where value-based healthcare is relevant. And then the third is in the choice of the treatment. And properly agreeing with the person whose wound it is, you know, what the options are, helping them to understand. You know, the clinician is the expert in the wound care, but the patient is the expert in themselves. And so really understanding what matters to them. And it may be that they take the view that actually I could live with having a wound as long as it's easy to manage. You know, I'm not that preoccupied about whether it's perfectly healed, whereas the clinician often will be. But what I want it to be is comfortable and not smelly and easy to care for, so it doesn't stop me doing the things I want to do.
Yeah, most certainly. I mean, it's very, the impact of wounds is dramatic in terms of people's physical health, but also hugely in terms of their mental health, the isolation, the anxiety, the suffering that they can feel with that. And these are things which I wouldn't say overlooked, but certainly not captured on a regular basis there. And you mentioned some great points around that. So there's three areas perhaps we could focus on, if I've understood that correctly. Prevention, patient-reported outcome measures, so PROMs as they're often called, and shared decision-making around the choice of treatment. So when thinking about those areas, how do we, from your experience, how do we start to prioritise what's important within a patient population?
Well, I think the first thing is we need to be properly talking with our patients and properly engaging with them and understanding what matters to them. And one of the great things about people tend to think of a PROM as something you measure after you've done something to a person, you've done an intervention. But actually, and yes, that is how they're used, but you do also use them before you do the intervention, as perhaps even before the consultation. And it's a really good way of giving the patient some voice in the consultation, because if the clinician then has got the PROM in front of them, which will have asked them about some aspects of their life beyond just the wound, then you can start to see what's important. And you can say, well, actually, it looks like pain is a real issue for you. Mm-hmm. Shall we talk about that more? So it's a way of engaging the patient, of giving the patient a chance to influence and shape the consultation around the things that matter to them. So that's the first thing I would say. And then the second thing is, if you're measuring clinical and patient reported outcomes after you've done something to them, you've chosen a choice of dressing or an intervention for a wound, then you can start to see whether the things that mattered to the patient are being addressed by the treatment. Mm. So you know, as a surgeon, I might be looking at the wound and going, oh, this is great, it's really beginning to heal now. And that's my measure of success. But the patient would go, yeah, it is, but it means I have to come to the hospital twice a day, so I can't go to work and I can't do all these other things. You know, is there not a treatment I could have that would be less disruptive for my life? So it's listening and being very attuned to that. And as I say, they might say, look, to be honest, I don't mind if I've got a small wound on my leg, as long as I, you know, with a dressing on it, that's fine. I just want to get back to you know, looking after my grandchildren or going on holiday or whatever it is that matters to them. So, you know, we have to respect that, and we have to engage in co-production, of co-decision-making, shared decision-making about the treatment options. And then the other thing is that there is a tendency, for understandable reasons, given the financial pressures health systems are under, is to say to people, well, you can't have that dressing because that's expensive. What you have to have is this cheap dressing, and you have to have that for 3 months. And then if that doesn't work, then you can have a more expensive dressing. Mm. Well, that may not be a good value decision. The value decision might be, let's put the more effective and more appropriate dressing on straight away, even though it does cost a little bit more, and get the problem solved faster, rather than have months of addressing that's never going to get it sorted out, but on the face of it appears cheaper. So there's that element that comes into play as well, I think.
And that element of cost and purchasing dressings is important. I mean, Mölnlycke are a wound care manufacturer. At the end of the day, we do sell products and we are a commercial organisation. However, the cost of treating a patient is so much wider than just the small cost of a dressing. I think the recent publication from Julian Guest said it, the cost of treating a patient in terms of the dressing cost moved from 14% down to 6%. So there's 94% of cost which is attributed towards specialist visits, GP visits, other drugs, maybe surgical intervention, etc. So being able to really start to quantify that at scale really gives an appreciation for healthcare systems as to that true cost, which is important as well. So how do we move this outcome measures, and how do we start to quantify these so we can understand the true cost at scale across different healthcare systems around the world?
So just on that list that of costs, you didn't include the cost to the patient, I might add. So the cost to the patient of having to get a bus. Or two buses or a train to their hospital to have a dressing, or to the clinic or to the surgery. You know, that's another cost, and to take time off work to do it as well. So as you say, there are many costs associated with care. Mm-hmm. And actually, back to Michael Porter, you know, he recognized that, and he said this is the cost of the cycle of care. This is not just the cost of the operation or the product in the case of a wound dressing. So how do we do it? Well, I think the first thing is that, and this is a responsibility for companies such as Mölnlycke, is that in the trials that are done on dressings and on operations, it's really important that as part of that, we're capturing not just the clinical outcomes, but the patient-reported outcomes in the studies as well. So that at the time when we start these things come to market, we have a much better understanding of what aspects of outcome are influenced by that dressing in the case of a wound dressing. The second thing is we need to get into the habit of routinely capturing patient-reported outcomes in all care pathways. And in Wales, we're certainly not doing that yet, but we are doing it increasingly of seeing more and more pathways where people are capturing outcomes. The third thing is that capturing them is great, but unless you do something with them, it was pointless. And if you, particularly with a long-term condition or maybe something like a chronic wound, you want people perhaps to be filling in a prom every so often, every month or every 3 months, or every 6 months or whatever it might be. Mm-hmm. They're not going to do that if they can't see any point. So it's really important that, and I've seen this for myself, a patient has filled in a prom before a consultation, they go into the consultation, the clinician just asks all the same questions again and clearly hasn't looked at the problem. Well, that's very disengaging for a patient. They go, well, why have I wasted my time doing that? So really important that people use PROMs in clinical care, and they use it in the discussions with patients, and they use it to make decisions. And then if you are properly capturing them in a systematic way, and you can link that to the interventions that the patient has had, you can start to see the clinical and reported and patient reported outcomes for that intervention coming through. And when you've got enough of them, you start getting that enough to make sense of it. But you do need to do it in a standardized way. And there is, you therefore need to do it at scale, you need a digital platform to be capturing PROMs, to be honest. And you need to standardize the way we do it, that you do it. And in Wales, where we have hundreds of thousands of PROMs, we've discovered that collected in all sorts of different ways. We discovered that actually, because we hadn't really set out exactly how to do it in a standardized way, it was hard to make sense of them. So we now have a standard operating model that's published in Wales for how to use PROMs. Mm-hmm. And And we have a framework of systems that people can procure that meet all our standards and the way of working. And that's really important, bit of enabling infrastructure to do this at scale.
Mm. And you talk a great deal there about clinicians and about the patients, and that links together with this shared decision-making agenda that's so central to value-based healthcare. The bit I suppose I want to pick up on is how we capture this.
Yeah.
The digitalization within the world of healthcare is just growing exponentially. And within wound care, it's seen as such an enabler towards delivering better patient outcomes. As you look around the world, there's a number of new apps, a number of new tools, which are readily available now to be able to start capturing and centralizing a lot of this data element, which can be so key towards improving healthcare systems and improving the total cost of care attributed towards wound care. So I suppose I know you have a digital hat amongst many of the hats you wear. So if we capture all this data in wound care and we can start to see certain trends or certain dynamics, how do we use that for the better of the patient?
Well, so you need to be capturing the outcomes and the cost, because otherwise you can't look at the relative value of different interventions. And luckily, most health systems, and it's interesting this, but most health systems are quite good at capturing cost, either very precisely or at least sufficiently approximately. Patient-level costing data is now becoming pretty routine. And indeed, it's a reflection, I think, of the fact that health systems, you know, their statutory obligation in the UK is to balance the books. The rest of it is secondary. So the finance systems are often quite sophisticated. So we have the two things, and you need to bring those together. So you need to know what you've spent in the pathway of care or on that particular part of the pathway of care and what the outcomes were. Mm. And then you need to find ways of visualizing those data. And there's a lot of focus on this around the world in Wales, but also elsewhere. About different ways of visualizing. And there are three audiences for those data. There is the clinician who needs to help it to inform, needs to know it to help inform decisions and discussions with patients. You need to visualize it for the patient. You know, they need to know what's going on. They need to be able to see. You know, they might be having a bad day when they go to see the clinician, but actually the trend in their wound or their trend in their other condition is improving. And actually being able to show them that on an app or on a chart is really a really important thing. Or they might see that actually most bits of their problem are getting better, but one bit, maybe pain, is not. And that's again helpful because it can shape the conversation. And someone can try and intervene in that particular thing. And then of course the system needs to be, you know, the people who are determining the allocation of resources need to see this. And you can do that at a population level. You know, should we be spending more on mental health and less on musculoskeletal conditions? But also within individual pathways, within individual hospitals, within individual clinical teams or treatment options. And I've seen many examples now where people have been, clinicians and clinical teams have been able to make an argument for investing some resources into something that they currently don't have because they can demonstrate that it will be of high value. Mm. And ideally, alongside that, there will be something they will stop doing that is of low value and that they can show is of low value and they realize is of low value, because that releases resource in a constrained system that you can invest in the things of higher value. And that's the trick, I think, for health systems in the current circumstances.
Mm. There's only a finite amount of resource, isn't there? So actually it's a bit of a seesaw type of approach. One area needs to gain resource because that's going to drive the most value, but actually that then needs to be relieved from another area in order to fund that or in order to support that, isn't it? And as we say, data is so key to that. So I suppose what we're getting towards here is how we can drive it forward and implement it. We've taken the journey of value-based healthcare in the first approach, and now we're focused much more on the wound care element. How wound care has got a big challenge, 3.8 million people in the UK suffering with the wounds every year, and how we can start to look at outcomes, look at preventative measures, and look at PROMs as a way of shared decision-making as a way of driving that forward. So who else really needs to be involved in this discussion to help implement value-based healthcare at scale now?
So we describe this as needing to happen at three levels, at macro, meso, and micro level. So macro level, if you like, is kind of national policy and infrastructure, maybe infrastructure around data and data capture and data sharing. The meso level is, if you like, the kind of organization or the hospital or the ICB type level. And then the micro level is the individual clinical teams and clinical pathways. And you need all of them to be doing it. And in our experience, it's really helpful to have a kind of macro environment that is favorable, that's encouraging a focus on value. And we are seeing this in health systems around the world. It's certainly true in Wales. But then you need a bottom-up approach. And our experience is that, you know, initially people they're a bit confused, but they think it's just about cost-cutting. And then you explain to them it's not. Quite the opposite, in a way. It's about using the money better. And then they really engage in it. And then you have other clinical teams who want to do it. And actually, the challenge to some extent is managing all the clinical teams who want to start doing it at the same time. and you need a resource within the organization not to do value-based healthcare. That has to be done by the clinical teams and the managers, but with some sort of specialist expertise, helping people to choose prompts, helping to make sure they're validated. There's often a license fee, making sure that's paid. In Wales, making sure that there's a valid translation into Welsh. So all of those things, and then the technical infrastructure of measurement and how do you measure and what times, you know, what time in the pathway do you measure, you know, before an intervention, maybe a week after, 6 weeks, 6 months, and so on. ICHOM published some of those trigger times, and that's really helpful, again, to standardize. So you need some specialist expertise, and, you know, we, but many other people too, offer courses to help people have that expertise. But you just need a kind of bottom-up groundswell, and you need to take patients with you on it. Mm. And say, provided patients can see the point of it, they can see that you're using the information, they will provide it. And there are clinical teams getting PROMs back from patients 5 years after they've operated on them, even though they're not being seen regularly anymore, because they know that there's a point to it. And it will help their care, but it'll also help the care of other patients. If it's just seen as a sort of survey that nobody does anything with, then you're going to go nowhere with it. So I would say that wound care teams, and you know, there are fantastic wound care teams across the world in health systems. You know, they need to drive this. They need to want to know, and I'm sure they do want to know what matters to their patients and what the outcomes they're getting are in respect of those things. And then they need to be working together, ideally, so they're using similar or the same PROMs, because that makes it easier to benchmark. And there is quite a choice out there, so important to settle on one. What we try to do in Wales is make sure that the relevant clinical community has a consensus view on what PROMs will be measured for a particular pathway. And then you can start to compare. So those are the things. There's a bit of kind of hard work associated with it, but it's very rewarding. And it allows better decision making and a continuous improvement in outcomes within the resources available.
Well, at the minute, I mean, we see nurses leaving in their droves in certain healthcare systems around the world, and there's such a shortfall there. And speaking from experience, as part of my family are district nurses in the local area to where I live, part of that is morale. If you've been caring for a patient with a chronic wound for a number of years, as a nurse, you take certain pride or responsibility in that patient's care. If you've not been able to see an improvement through data or through anecdotal or through the visual assessments you do on a regular basis, I can imagine that can become quite frustrating and lower your kind of morale and passion for the actual topic and the subject that's there. So again, I think it comes back to a lot of having the right type of data and having the right type of information available to you to be able to make these decisions and see genuine improvements in patient care. So having that macro all the way down to micro level engagement in the topic is so key. There are good practices around the world, and just to have the opportunity to call those out, I know within in Sydney, in Western Australia, they are one of the few organisations in the world to deliberately have an explicitly documented value-based healthcare programme focused on chronic wound care, which is very, very progressive and very, very good to see and kind of look at it from a and read more about that. So the journey of value-based healthcare within wound care is growing, and it's good to see the improvements in data and in projects around the world. So yes.
And I would just add, James, that and you alluded to this at the beginning, is that, you know, wound care is seen sometimes as a bit of a sort of Cinderella specialty in healthcare. It doesn't get the attention that it should, despite the impact it has on so many patients and on the budget. So this is a way of getting a different focus on it, of really demonstrating the value of what goes on in wound care and wound care teams. But it should also, you know, it should also help some of the decision making. You know, there will be patients for whom a different option that might be a more expensive option would be of higher value. But equally, there would be quite a lot of patients maybe having a very high cost intervention who would have done perfectly well with a less expensive intervention. And then there will be some people who would benefit from having a skin graft rather than months and months of dressings and maybe getting it healed up that much faster. So all of these things, it starts to give data to inform those discussions, and it will help wound care teams on the ground when they're talking to their managers and their finance colleagues in the systems they work in to be making the case for why they want to do what they want to do for their patients. And as you say, you know, it is, if all you're focused on is getting the wound healed and it's not healing, that is very depressing. Mm. But actually, if you start to take into account other things that matter to the patient, you may well find that many of those have got better. So the patient might be saying, well, yeah, okay, it hasn't got, okay, the wound's still not healed, but it's much less painful, it's much less smelly, it's much less troublesome. And so you can, you get that very positive reinforcement that things are getting better, even if the very narrow clinical measure of time to healing hasn't yet been cracked.
So I think that brings us towards the end of our discussion around value-based healthcare across these two podcasts. And I suppose Hamish and I, we could talk for a long time on this, and I could continue to ask you questions. So if it would be good if there is demand to carry this discussion on a later date. But I suppose to summarise, we've had the first podcast which we looked at value-based healthcare in general. What is it? Where did it come from? What good practices have we had around the world on there? And then podcast two, we've really focused around wound care and doing a deep dive, mainly talking about the positives and the opportunities for healthcare systems, healthcare organisations, providers, to capitalise on this as a way of delivering better patient-centred care and collecting data to be able to support that. So I hope you've enjoyed the discussion. And again, I'd like to thank Hamish for joining us here and welcome you back at a later date.
Thank you very much, James. It's been a great pleasure.
My thanks again to Hamish and James for sharing their insights. I hope you found it as informative as I certainly have. It is an interesting topic where you look at the price of the choice made by a clinician being very different to the actual cost of the patient. We hope this has made you want to check out other podcasts we have in our Wound Care Voices series. But for today, that's all from the podcast studio, and goodbye for now.